This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice begins a five-day tour of Latin America in Brazil. She's scheduled to go on to Chile, Colombia, and El Salvador. Since 9/11, Latin America has taken a back seat in Washington, and this trip is an attempt to remedy that. Secretary Rice wants to emphasize democracy, development, and trade. Her counterparts will want to talk about poverty, debt relief, immigration, and their sometimes very different views on trade. Over the past several years, a series of leftist and populist governments has taken power in several countries. There's still instability in some nations. Just last week, for example, protesters in Ecuador forced the departure of that country's third president in 8 years. And then there's Hugo Chavez, the firebrand leftist president of Venezuela. Today, Secretary Rice meets with a more moderate left-winger, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who has his own ambitions for regional and international influence. Later in the program, a conversation with director Ridley Scott about Hollywood, the Crusades, and his new film, Kingdom of Heaven. But first, Latin America. If you're from the region, if you visit, or if you have business there, what role do you see for the U.S. now? Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Arturo Valenzuela, director of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University, a former Clinton administration official who specialized in Latin America issues. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Very nice of you to join us today.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, as I mentioned, you worked on Latin American issues during President Clinton's second term. I wonder, is Secretary Rice going to encounter a feeling of some resentment that Latin American issues have taken a back seat over the past, 5 years and more?
Well, I think so. The fact of the matter is that over the last few years, there's been a greater estrangement with the United States than in the more recent past. Of course, historically, there's always been a tension between Latin America and the United States. But with the end of the Cold War and even after 9/11, there was an enormous outpouring of support and solidarity with the United States. But the attention of the United States focused elsewhere in the world. The rejection by most people in mass publics in the population and among leaders in the region towards Iraq policy and other policies that the United States has been pursuing in the world, as well as a disillusionment with some of the policies that the United States has been pushing over the last few years in terms of free trade and liberalization among various sectors, has led to a situation where Latin Americans are now much more wary of the United States than they were in the more recent past.
I wonder, is this in a way being emblemized in the current, struggle to elect a new president of the Organization of American States? That's a role that Secretary General, I guess, is the head of it, but that's a title that has normally been in the gift of the United States.
Well, yes, and this was a very unfortunate development. Here, 17 foreign ministers came to Washington. The Organization of American States, all of the countries of the region, sat down to try to select a Secretary General, and they weren't able to do that. And unfortunately, the result of that was a polarization of the hemisphere, an unnecessary, in my view, polarization of the hemisphere between North and South and more leftist governments and more rightist governments. Unnecessary, and I think the United States probably should have handled that better. It was not an outcome that favored the United States. The United States backed a candidate that had to withdraw 2 days before the election, and then the United States did not succeed in getting its second choice. So there is some bitterness in the region, and there's a huge task and challenge, not only for the United States, of course, but also for the countries in the region to try to get the cooperative sort of arrangements that were instituted in the immediate post-Cold War era back on track.
There has long been a concern by many in the region over the U.S. Trade embargo against Cuba. Now there is concern that the U.S. may be trying to expand policies like that to include Fidel Castro's friend in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez.
Well, I think there's a fairly significant disagreement between the United States and most of the leaders in Latin America regarding how you deal with Venezuela. I think it's fair to say that most of the leaders of the region have very little respect for Chavez. They consider him a demagogue. They consider him a dilettante. He does not have strong leftist roots, ironically. I mean, in some ways, you mentioned that the Brazilian president is a more moderate socialist, but his leftist roots are far more solid than those of Hugo Chavez, who's more of a populist. He's a former military man and kind of a populist demagogue rather than somebody who has strong roots in the Latin American left. The point I'm trying to make is that that while there is a rejection of Chavez on the one hand, there's also a great wariness on a U.S. policy that's been focusing so single-mindedly on one country, on one leader, an extension of a foreign policy that's kind of a Manichaean in their view, where you see the world in terms of good guys and bad guys, and you don't understand the fundamental structural forces that in fact led to the election of Chavez himself, and that's a real challenge.
And you mentioned Lula da Silva, the president of Brazil. Of course, that is the largest and most important economy in the region. Condoleezza Rice, Secretary Rice, is meeting with him today, and one of the big issues is certain to be trade. The U.S. proposal for a free trade area of the Americas, this looks to be losing a lot of steam.
Well, it has been losing a lot of steam, and it's unfortunate because, you know, I certainly am a supporter in the Clinton administration. Was a supporter. In fact, the whole strategy to try to create a free trade agreement of the Americas began in 1994 with the Summit of the Americas under the leadership of President Clinton. And this, I think, is a vision that the hemisphere wants to embrace and should embrace, but we haven't really gotten there. And I think that perhaps some of the problem is that the strategy that this administration has followed in focusing on regional agreements rather than trying to pursue the broader agreement has been a mistake. Ultimately, the United States is going to have to deal with Brazil in order to get to the broader agreement, and that's the issue that's on the table. The Brazilians, of course, say you cannot tell us to make concessions on intellectual property or on investment issues unless, of course, you stop doing massive agricultural subsidies. We are an agricultural exporting nation, and so that's essentially some of the debate there. And until the United States really sits down with Brazil on these issues and faces them squarely, I don't think you're going to get a positive outcome. In that sense, it's good that Condoleezza Rice is going on her first stop is with Brazil. That sends us a really important signal to the region. A lot of people in this town, particularly on the Republican right, were at one point saying that it was Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and Fidel Castro in Cuba and Lula da Silva in Brazil, all these new leftist presidents. But the fact of the matter is that there are two different lefts in Latin America. There's the populist left that Chavez is really the only one that represents that. And then there's a more moderate socialist left that's been very successful in Chile. And that's the path that Brazil is following too. And nobody believes anymore in the Cuban model in the region.
Well, let's bring another voice into the conversation. Also with us here in Studio 3A is Stephen Johnson. He follows Latin American affairs at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Neil, thank you.
Given everything else in the world going on, how important is Latin America? This is Condoleezza Rice, recently sworn in as Secretary of State. Of course, she's been to Europe, to the Middle East, to Far East in Asia, been to Russia, now to Latin America.
Well, different regions of the world, Neil, have their ups and downs, and Latin America was important during the 1980s when the Soviet Union was interested in it. But following that, after U.S. lawmakers and U.S. presidents began to see a change and elected heads of state in 33 out of 35 countries, then interest began to slip. And, of course, with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, and we began to shift resources, development aid toward the former Soviet republics. And then following 9/11, a lot of that has gone to the Middle East, and much of our attention has been a focus there. I guess the real difficulty and the real challenge for U.S. officials and particularly elected officials who come into this as opposed to career diplomats is learning how to walk and chew gum at the same time. That is, divide their efforts and delegate authority so that they're able to handle various issues and have follow-up and follow-on programs that continue many of the initiatives that have gone on before. My own sense is that a lot of the focus that we had on Central America and Latin America in general in the early 1990s began to wane as we turned our attention elsewhere. I don't really blame any particular administration for it or blame anybody in Congress, but I think it's only natural to try and economize on resources and begin to focus on what you think the priority is. The only problem is that sometimes we make mistakes and sometimes we overlook the fact that perhaps the work really wasn't done and the signals really weren't sent, signals of support to the friends that we have in the region.
Well, I want you involved in this conversation as well. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, totn@npr.org. Let's begin with Eddie. Eddie's on the line from Miami, Florida.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
The reason I'm calling, it's a little bit different from the conversation, but one of the things that are occurring in South America, as we have, as the gentleman said, waned our interest in the area, or at least that's the perception down in South America, is that the Asians are taking a foothold, both in investment and influence, certainly in the stronger economies like Chile, the Asians being Japan, Korea, and more than any of them, the Chinese. This has been occurring for about the past 5 years, from my knowledge. And my question is, over the next decade or two, do you see the influence of Asia and their growing economy and world domination of the economy as being a factor in South America, and if that factor will lessen our own influence in the area?
And we'll begin with a brief response from Stephen Johnson. We're going to have to go over this break with the question, but go ahead.
Basically, Eddie, I think that China is more interested in resources that Latin America has and satisfying its own need for those to grow its own economy. Mm-hmm. Japan is a much more mature economy and is interested, like the United States is, in trade and encouraging a more mature trade relationship with Latin America.
But the real challenge that Latin America faces, of course, is that China is now producing products that Latin America used to produce, for example, textiles, and they're really being outclassed. So China and India are an opportunity for Latin America, as Steve just mentioned, because they can export their raw materials to that region, but they're also a challenge.
Gentlemen, I underestimated you. Thank you very much for dealing with that question. Eddie, thank you for the phone call. We'll take more of your calls about U.S. interests and policy toward Latin America after the break. 800-989-8255. Email totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with Stephen Johnson of the Heritage Foundation about U.S. efforts to find common ground with many nations of Latin America. Also with us is Arturo Valenzuela of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go first to Lemoyne. Lemoyne's calling from San Francisco.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I think that any starting point for discussing U.S.-Latin American relations needs to start with the reality of some pretty brutal and violent U.S. militarism and intervention. I hail from Panama, as a matter of fact, and I can tell you that deep within the Panamanian psyche, and something that still invokes a great deal of emotion, is a history that involves 1964, U.S. soldiers opened fire on protesting Panamanian students, mm-hmm. killing 22, wounding some 500. 1989, in order to get one individual, 400 bombs or missiles hit Panama City. 2,000 innocent people are killed, 10,000 wounded, 20,000 left homeless. So the Nicaragüenses, the Guatemaltecos, the Salvadorans, the Chilenos, all of us have stories of U.S. intervention. And that is something that is deep within our emotions and our psyche, something that informs our outlook. And that is why not only people in Venezuela, but throughout the region and Latinoamericanos in this country are rallying behind Mr. Chavez, because we can only see negative things coming from the colossal of the North. The colossal of the North has never cared about us, has always treated us with disrespect and violence. And anybody who opposes the colossal of the North is, in fact, going to find a wellspring of support throughout the region. And we mean this, and we feel it deep in our hearts. So I'll just leave it there and hear your comments.
Okay, thanks for the call, Lemoyne. Arturo Valenzuela.
Sure. I think the caller is correct in saying that in many places in Latin America, particularly in the Central American countries, the Caribbean, U.S. policies in the past have had a lingering legacy in not that distant past, although things go way back. We could not understand, for example, the advent of the Castro Revolution in Cuba. We could not have understood the advent of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua without the legacy of U.S. intervention in those countries and the negative impact in some ways that it left in the popular psyche. I do believe, however, that with the end of the Cold War, the United States really did embark on a different policy towards the region, one that was based much more on mutual respect, one that was based much more on multilateral efforts at understanding. The asymmetries between the United States and the region are still huge. The United States is 76% of the production of the entire Western Hemisphere, and all of the other countries are the rest. So the United States is enormous. But a policy of respect on the part of the United States, a policy of constructive engagement on the part of the United States, I think is a welcome objective in the post-Cold War era. Unfortunately, I think this administration has dropped the ball a bit in not following up on this engagement and perhaps unilateralizing it a bit too much, focusing much more on bilateral relationships rather than on the broader context of what we spoke about earlier, for example, the importance of the OAS.
Stephen Johnson?
Well, I think Lemoyne makes a good point, and certainly there are various points of view overseas about the United States and its role in relations with its neighbors. The United States, like any large nation, looks out after its own interests, and we have to recognize that. Sometimes it's been misguided in the past, sometimes exaggerated, considering the conditions that it was facing and some of the threats that it thought it was facing in the hemisphere, sometimes not. But there is also a huge constituency of Latin Americans that do consider the United States a friend, and also a power that should have its influence felt. I thought it was interesting that Marta Sagajón, the wife of Vicente Fox, president of Mexico, said on TV Azteca not too long ago that it's a shame that 10 million Mexicans had to immigrate to the United States to go there to create wealth. And I think there are a lot of people that admire that. Question is how does a big country like the United States that has a very different kind of culture, a very different kind of historical background and formation, have the kind of dialogue that it needs to have with Latin American countries that come from a very different history and a very different formation and understanding of their European and Indian roots.
Arturo Valenzuela, I wanted to thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure to be here.
Arturo Valenzuela, director of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University, was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Next, we turn to Luis Pedone, a researcher at Federal University of Rio de Janeiro and former chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Brasilia, and he joins us by phone from his home in Brazil. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
To what extent do you think Latin America felt ignored by the Bush administration?
In the first 4 years, there were other interests, of course, caused by 9/11, and I think Latin America was put in the back burner for a while. And now that all the consequences of 9/11 have more or less been under control or under parameters that are controlled by the U.S., Latin America becomes again an issue, especially with personality just like President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela becoming a point of contention between the U.S. and the rest of the hemisphere.
People in Brazil, for example, are they exasperated by the what appears to be a growing confrontation?
Well, I think Chavez uses this for internal purposes very well. I think that he wants it's not really a point of contention. I wouldn't think that Chavez would threaten not even its neighbor Colombia not to think of U.S., you know, at all.
And relations with Colombia have not been great with Venezuela.
Have been great, but it hasn't been a threat. I mean, Venezuela is not going to invade Colombia or vice versa. and Venezuela versus U.S. On just a bilateral confrontation is unthinkable. But Chavez uses this point for internal purposes, for political internal purposes. Consider the last three things that he did. He changed the judiciary system to favor him. He changed the law of means, law of media, to practically impose a censorship. And anybody who talks bad about him can be thrown in jail. I mean, this is good for having such an enemy, such a big enemy like U.S. It's good for him internally. I don't think, but that for the rest of Latin America is not good at all. I mean, U.S. Latin America relations should not base themselves just on that point. I think this is what is important about even the visit of Condoleezza Rice to the southern part of the hemisphere.
Well, let's get another caller on the line, and this is William. William's calling us from Minneapolis.
Hey, Neil, I just want to congratulate you for your show and this particular topic today. I'm a Venezuelan, and I've been living here in Minneapolis for the last about 10 years. I'll make my statement short. I appreciate the very first two guests that said that, you know, this issue goes beyond names of people. We call it Chavez, Castro, even Condoleezza Rice. I think the problem has to be addressed looking at the history of Latin America, knowing that there's been an 80% of people down there that for many years, half of this century at least, have lived in very repressed conditions, poverty, and are not doing well. And then when somebody like Chavez, you know, comes up and shows up, they believe in this guy as a savior. So Chavez is truly, I believe, a populist that have taken advantage of that need that people had for saviors and to say for a savior in the region. And to say the truth, the guy is quite popular right now in Venezuela among obviously, his followers mostly, which are becoming more than half of the population slowly, and also in Brazil. In Argentina, he's quite famous. I tended to support Chavez, and I become really critical of him because I believe he lost the protocol to talk about international matters. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly agree with the way he's, you know, talking back to Condoleezza Rice or to the U.S. these days. But I didn't particularly agree either with the way Condoleezza Rice made at one point a commentary about him and access of evils in Latin America. I think it could end up being a fight between children. You know, I guess my call asks also for I asked these leaders to have a little more diplomacy, both here in Venezuela and in South America, to come to terms and stop, you know, kind of beaching on each other like children do.
William, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And let me ask both of our guests to address the issue, not strictly in terms of President Chavez, but in broader terms. I mean, there was great hope that the collapse of the authoritarian regimes through much of the region in the 80s and 90s, the introduction of democratic governments in most places would bring about great prosperity. That has turned into a terrible disappointment, has it not, Luis Pedone?
Yes, I believe that 12 years ago, more or less, we had all Latin American countries from Mexico down to Patagonia, all of them had democratic elected government except for Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point that everybody thought, oh, there is something going on here. There's a promise of democracy. But the political democracy without economic democracy doesn't mean a thing. I mean, the way people lived then continues to be the same way people live now, and that didn't bring any result in terms of improved life standards for people, or the poorest getting a larger portion of the income. On the contrary, the richest got richer, and the poorest got poorer. In various countries, the equation remained more or less the same, or very little change in favor of the poor. But the equation is just about the same as 20 years ago, when we left military regimes. And furthermore, Even in countries like Brazil, very partially industrialized, persons remember in the 70s and 80s how easy it was to find a job, and how hard it is, and we were under military regime, and how hard it is to find a job under democratic regime nowadays. Unemployment is rampant. Plants are being closed down. There's no increase in the economy in terms of jobs. The 10 million jobs that President Lula thought of being capable of providing for the 2003-2004 didn't come up. Only a dismal 1.4, 1.5 new jobs, million new jobs came up, which is 15% of what he promised. So there's this idea that something is wrong. Yesterday we had a very good, interesting point about interest rates, how interest rates are interfering in terms of economic growth and being capable of investment, impeding investment and impeding economic development in a country like Brazil. There will be a big discussion on how interest rates affect economic development in the next few months, I believe. And I believe this is to improve the situation of economic democracy as well as political democracy. We have had already an opening of democratic opening, and very interesting one.
We're talking about Latin America and U.S. policy, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Stephen Johnson, I wanted to bring you in on just the point we were talking about. Is there going to be an element of a democracy fatigue as Condoleezza Rice goes through Latin America?
Well, I think what's happened, Neil, as Luis has been pointing out, is that you can't have elections and trade as a veneer to paper over old exclusionary models. And that's largely what has happened with some of these reforms. Elections have taken place. New leaders are elected as opposed to being appointed or coming into power through revolutions and coups. But the problem is that there's very little separation of powers, checks and balances. There's political parties that belong to party owners or their founders, and no primary elections to bring fresh faces and fresh blood into the system. And as far as the economics is concerned, we had a lot of privatizations in which state enterprises were basically sold to cronies. Now, that's not a real privatization. That doesn't allow the public access to the economy to promote public participation in economic decision-making, and that's really what has to happen. These are second- and third-generation reforms. The United States is going to be effective in its relations with Latin America. It's got to promote these more heavily. But the problem is, Neil, is how do we do that without being overbearing? How do we encourage our friends to come along and to do this and to give up some of the perks that they've had, particularly the elites, and foment something that is a reform that allows all ships in the sea to rise with the tide.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but let me begin by asking you, Luis Bedone, should the United States begin to address this by addressing the entire region of Latin America, or should it be a more focused effort country by country?
The region is different in itself. The Andean region is totally different from countries like Brazil or Uruguay. Or even if you consider Central America and the Caribbean countries are totally different from the rest. So I think you have to deal with sub-region by region. I would think that Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia have the same type of society that is going against their elites. And we saw just a week ago the ousting of the President Gutierrez of Ecuador. Carlos Mesa in Bolivia is having problems with the Evo Morales group, the Andean Indians of Cocaleros, etc. in Bolivia, and the same thing happening in Peru. But this is not the case in Brazil or in Uruguay or in Argentina. So there are different social contexts economic context that should be dealt with more or less in a sub-region by sub-region way. Now, if U.S. wants to improve democratization that has happened already in terms of electoral democratization in countries like Brazil and others, it has to impose these second and third generation reforms that there are, or impose or push for those second and third generation reforms that are needed. Judiciary, legislative, financial, public and private control of financial affairs.
But again, the issue will be how to do that without being heavy-handed. I'd like to thank both of my guests for joining us today. I'm afraid we're out of time. Luis Padone, researcher at Federal University of Rio de Janeiro, former chair of political science at the University of Brasilia, joined us by phone from his home in Rio de Janeiro. And we'd especially like to thank Stephen Johnson at the Heritage Foundation, who joined us in Studio 3A. Ridley Scott, when we come back from a break.